The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 524, recorded on December 18th, 2018. God damn you.
Oh, I felt like we had a good one going.
We did.
All right. Hello, and welcome to the... Welcome to the 524th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 357th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I am Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Because I was laughing as you were talking about dancing and just ridiculous. Well, it's better than talking about PewDiePie, that's for damn sure.
Ugh. Can we not?
Let's not. Yes, please,
hope this is the last. This is the last straw, because I'm trying to figure out how Google's going to justify keeping him on when he's forwarding people to actual Nazi websites.
Oh, but he didn't know. Well, if he didn't know, then he's fucking stupid, and you worship an idiot.
No. Oh, really? You mean having people hold up signs that said, kill a Jew wasn't a clue enough? That was an accident, too? I'm trying to figure out the satire there.
I don't know.
Like I said, there's only two solutions. He either did know and is malicious, or he didn't know and he's a fucking idiot, and why would you look up to someone like that?
I'm leaning towards idiot, but yeah.
There's other news that we're not going to talk about, not because it's bad, because either it's not interesting or it's just... Fuck, I forgot already. But see, that's why I didn't want to talk about that news.
I actually got into it with somebody over this, and like they said, you know, you'd understand yelling things in a passionate moment if you played a game. I was like, dude, I competed in Capcom Cup and took ninth, and against all odds, I managed to not say an ethnic slur while I did it.
You know, I've had some really angry moments with video games, and I also have not used racial slurs. You know, it's like, shit.
One of the things that PC Gamer talked about was Dragon Quest XI's localization, and talked about how much work they put into it. And of course, Scott would know this because he's been playing it, but there are entire villages which have their own different cultures. I mean, you go to one village, it's Italian, and everybody's talking like Mario. Another village you go to that's in France, you know, that's French. And then they have to go to a village where everybody rhymes?
Yeah, they're haikus. That's
no, there's joke. Haikus, and there's another one. The mermaids, I think, all rhyme.
Oh, yeah, the mermaids, yes, they do rhyme.
But there's also a village that only speaks in all haikus, and they had to come up with all those haikus.
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting. That sounds like an exhausting way to live.
It's not only that, but they also knew the tone of the game, and one of the things they had to do was they also had to give it the entire game sort of a we're not taking this really seriously sort of vibe, which is basically the entire point of Dragon Quest XI, even in the Japanese versions. It's lighthearted, you know, and fun, you know. And they had to communicate that, you know, that don't take this really, really seriously. You know, this is supposed to be a fun game. Just enjoy it, you know. And that's one thing they had to do with the localization. And I can remember when localization used to be piss poor. I'm not even talking about someone set us up the bomb. I just mean the tone.
All your base belong to us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even talking about mistranslations. I'm talking about just
completely miss something because it's a concept to the language that just doesn't translate well one-to-one.
Yeah, but also the tone. You know, like I said, Dragon Quest XI is supposed to be upbeat, fun, you know, and I could have easily seen them treating it like dark and gritty, you know, because Kirby in America is hostile.
Well, there were some dark moments.
Well, there are dark moments, but they're translated. I'm talking about when you take Kirby and you give him angry eyes.
Yeah, I think it's a better balance, is what you're saying. You have these lighthearted villages, but there's still some real issues that some of these places are dealing with, and some of these things that are happening. I don't want to go too much detail, but like I said, there are some gritty, grim things happening, and it's balanced with some lightheartedness. Like you said, I don't feel that it's too over the top, because I felt like that's what Dragon Quest IX was very over the top. I couldn't take it at all serious. I couldn't get into it. I just felt like I just didn't care about any of it because there was no characters. Everybody was a blank slate, and there was just jokes, constant freaking jokes, and it just I just couldn't get into it. But Dragon Quest XI has some jokes, but it also has some serious stuff where in character development. You care about the characters, and so you care about what they're going through, and so you sure have somebody rhyming, but they might be rhyming about something that's seriously messed up. So it's interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it makes me think of that RPG I was telling you guys about. I just drew a complete blank on it, but it was the Gun Kung Fu one that takes place in the steampunk world. And it really does feel like when everybody's talking in the cutscenes, it feels like they're all having different conversations. And I'm not sure if that's because of the translation being off or if it's just because the script is poor, but it's weird. It's weird with the dialogue.
So I'm just saying localization has come a long way, and someone made sure on the American translation team to make sure they got the tone of the game right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they did that a good job.
Anyways, we're going to talk about what you've been playing. Before we do that, actually, just so you all know, today's the 18th, which means next week is Christmas, so you're not going to see a podcast then. As a matter of fact, this is probably going to be the last podcast of 2019. We also have to set up our games of the year, and we're going to play it straight this year, just what our favorite games were, and we'd like to hear from you what your favorite games were. And it doesn't have to be best this, best that, just the games that you really, really enjoyed and you just want to give a shout-out.
Cool.
That sounds good.
I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of games that are coming out late which have been opening people's eyes. Now, one of the games I've been playing is Dusk, and I played it last week too, but I forgot to mention it. And as someone who played Doom in the 90s and all the other FPSs, yeah, it got it spot on. And it took those games and just said, you know what, we're going to make it a little bit more tartar, a little harder, a little faster, and it works. You know, and I can see why a lot of people are actually putting this retro-inspired shooter as one of their best games of the year. It's just, you know, it does what it wants to do, and it does it well.
That's good.
The other game, which I have not played, but has been really getting a lot of attention, and this is very last second, and it's really one of the most beautiful games you'll see. It's called Gris.
Yes.
Gris, and everybody's been raving about it. You know, when you talk about something like Okami being beautiful, no. This is where I think technology is at its best, in which you basically have watercolor paintings come to life.
And yeah, I think we saw this at the PC game reveal at E3 or what?
No, I don't know if it was E3. Didn't show this game, I don't think. I could be wrong.
I don't remember if it was E3 or a different. Was it Gamescom or? There was I'm sure I saw this revealed at that PC show where they showed like 30 games or something, and one of them was this one where you're traversing this like you said, watercolor land, and this girl has gone through something traumatic, and I think you're trying to help her deal with it.
Well, that's the game. I don't know if I saw it, but yeah, and it really looks beautiful, and it's been getting rave reviews, you know. And, you know, I mean, one of the things I really like is that this is a female protagonist, and none of the cockroaches are coming out to say anything about it, at least not yet. Let's not give them any ideas.
Yeah. Well, what they say, there's nothing to say.
Trust me, they can find a reason to hate it. And just revealed today, it's not, I mean, in a large way, I mean, he was talking about this game for a while now, but there's another game that's been being shown off called Degrees of Separation, which is another colorful puzzle platformer with watercolor bent, and it's written by Chris Avalon. So he's doing something else besides the new zombie game. I don't know if you've seen that yet. And this one is basically a co-op version of Gris. That's really reductive, I know, but I'm just trying to sell it down to one sentence. It's like Gris, except there's two people playing, one light, one dark. Or actually, one cold, one hot.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. If you see, it's not as artistic as Gris, you know, because Gris is basically a watercolor painting come to life. But it does rely a lot on art, and also the characters themselves change the scenery. One is hot, the other one is dark. You know, Ember and Rhyme, and they have to work together to overcome obstacles. I also played Forza Horizon 4, and I nearly jumped out of my seat at the beginning because it called me by my name. It said, "Hello, Jonah. I see you." You know, and I said, "What? Wait, what?" I didn't tell you my name.
Was this on Xbox or PC?
Well, it's also on Windows 10. I'm guessing it knows my name from my Xbox account. So it's reading that.
I guess you better not play Doki Doki then. It'll also know your name.
Well, yeah, but Doki Doki is just a run-of-the-mill thing that thinks it's going to be a horror game. I mean, here's the thing. Play it. It's free. You don't have to worry about it. You know, it's like, but it's just bog standard. After the one girl commits suicide, it's boring.
Wow.
So, I played Forza Horizon 4, and here's the thing: I'm not a fan of the Horizon series. I'm a fan of the Motorsport series. I know people must think, "Oh, it's really dull. You're driving on tracks." Yeah, but that's just the point. I care about the cars, you know, and I care about, you know. I don't want to have to worry about oncoming traffic when I'm racing. Here's the thing. If I'm going to play that sort of game, it better fucking be Burnout or Blur or something like that, because if another car nudges into me, I will go back, but I can't do anything to the other cars. That's not fair. If you're going to nudge me out, you know, and make me lose the race that way, well, screw you. I want to do the same. So at least in Burnout, it's honest. I mean, you just straight up crash them. Get out of my way. You know? It's not... So, Forza Horizon 4, to me, is too much like Mario Kart.
But really?
It's pretty, and if you're into the... If you're into off-road and all that type of game, it's great. The only thing is that I actually got a top-of-the-line car, which I was able to kit out, to be X999, which means it's the best thing you could possibly do. And I did that within 3 hours of playing. I get the idea, well, you know, you're supposed to tailor the car to what the kind of race is, and the cars that you race are going to be on that level. But I'm thinking, you know, that progression is too fast. I know you want me to get me to buy other cars, because if I have one hot car, I get the others. But, you know, I like to work at it, and that's what Forza does. Forza Motorsport does. It makes me work for it. Horizon just wants me to get me out there and play with other people. And maybe I'm a sociopath, but I don't really care about other people. If I'm not doing a multiplayer game, I don't want the multiplayer game in my single player. I don't know. Maybe it sounds like I'm being a fuddy-duddy, but you know, if I want to play Burnout, I'll play Burnout. You know, and I don't want to play half-assed Burnout. I want to play Burnout in which you ran people off the road, and you just the crash goes into slow motion because you're enjoying watching their car get blowed up.
I feel like Horizon was always supposed to be the more arcadey end of it, wasn't it, though?
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's half arcadey. It's like it still has all the stuff for tuning and all that stuff that you'll find in Forza, you know, Motorsport. But it's just, you know, if, like I said, if you're going to go all the way, you know, Need for Speed, Most Wanted, yeah, I want to fuck those police cars up. You know, if you're going to crash into me, I want to fuck you up more. I want to grab you and push you off the mountain. Yeah, you fuck with me, I'm going to fuck with you even harder.
But fair enough.
Here's the thing, it's not so bad that I might not get it when it's like $20 or something. So, I mean, it's a fun... There's a reason why it's a lot of people consider it the best Xbox One game of the year, you know? There's a reason for that. But it's just not... I don't get the mentality of people who enjoy Forza Horizon. I don't. I know why. Maybe they have short attention spans. But to me, Forza Motorsport is where it's at.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, like...
Oh, no. Oh, by the way, I want Blur to be backwards compatible, God damn it.
Horizon is a game that exists for... I mean, like, for one thing, you don't get a lot of... If there was a Burnout out there right now, like, if they were coming out with more Burnout games, I would say, yeah, but, like... There really isn't, besides Mario Kart.
If you want to burn out Forza Horizon, you just get Burnout Paradise, because it's basically the same thing. You're in an open world. You just don't have people with you at the same time.
I'm saying is that there's no such thing as, like, new Burnout. There really aren't any new arcade games.
They remastered Burnout Paradise, so. Here's the thing. Of all the Burnouts they could make backwards compatible, they didn't do the ones I wanted.
All I'm saying is that, like, Mario Kart is the only consistent arcade driver game around, that's simply a sad truth.
Burnout has always been consistent. It's just not owned by Nintendo, who can put out the same crap over and over and over again. I don't know. So what have you been playing, TJ?
I'm getting ready to compete in Blaze Blue Tag again this weekend, so I've been practicing.
Okay, make sure you don't do any Nazi slurs when you're losing.
Oh, sure, right? I have a bad taste in my mouth from Canada Cup because I lost to the PS4's share button.
It's a poor craftsman who blames his tools.
It was my fault. I forgot to turn off the share button before I went into my last match, and it cost me dearly. But I haven't forgotten about it, and I need to get that taste in my mouth, so I'm going to use the blood of fresh opponents to do it.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
Well, I'm going to be playing the latest expansion that came out for the Pillars of Eternity 2. And speaking of the game of the year, apparently it got one for RPG of the year. And so I'm going to be exploring.
Because I know PC Gamer gave it to Divinity.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play a new game of Pillars of Eternity 2 and see what it's all about.
DLCs. You know that Divinity Origin 2 is actually on sale right now for $11.40 on Steam.
Yeah, I think I already have that.
I know, but I don't. So okay. I'm just seeing if I want to get it. There's another game which I'm looking at, which is called Transport Fever, which is also on sale. I'm asking around because I need to get my Railroad Tycoon on, not the remake, the original. And I don't want to get burned with this one because Transport Tycoon I did not like. I know a lot of people liked it. I didn't. So.
Did you ever... what's the one that people play these days that's everybody loves? There's another one that's like it's hard to tell if it's actually like a tycoon game or if it's just straight up like just build trains and
You're talking about trains?
Railroad Tycoon?
No.
It's fairly newish, but not too new.
No, because they just released a whole bunch of expansions lately. They actually announced a new train game too that's coming out, which I'm hoping for. Only games here because I know there was a train. I'm just gonna look up Mexico, search that because I know that was one of the expansions. Railway Empire.
No, it was something like Transport something, but I can't remember the name.
That's the one I was just talking about.
No, it's a different one.
There's another train game coming out, which is more on the business side, and I forgot what it's called. Railway something else. Railway. Damn it. Okay, well.
Yeah, it says best RPG, according to PC Gamer, of 2018 was Pillars of Eternity 2, at least according to PC Gamer.
That's not... PC Gamer gave it to Divinity.
I'm seeing it say Pillars of Eternity 2.
That's odd.
10 hours ago. I'll link it right to you.
So, anyways. Maybe they changed their mind.
I don't know.
It's like a rock, paper, shotgun. Maybe they had their own version. No, they're just reviewing Dusk right now. So, anyways, have you any interest in Dusk, TJ?
No, I've kind of moved back to like past the D-Res Quake era of games that people are putting out. That's like, I don't care about them anymore.
Yeah, but the difference with Dusk is that it really is like playing that, and it's polished to such a degree that it's just fast paced, you know.
And I mean, that's fair. I understand. I'm not saying that those people are wrong for enjoying it. I'm just saying that I've kind of moved to it past a, like, seeing people make intentionally ugly games for the sake of
thing. But here's the thing. We talked about this like a few months ago. You know, what games did you play that you're finally playing that you heard about? And you're finally finding out that's going to be you. That's going to be you. You're gonna see it for $2 on Steam. You say, why not? And then you're gonna play and say, oh, so that's why people were really into it.
Yeah. See, I'm looking at it right now, and like I see the flat textures of the trees and like the blocky
deceptively blocky
enemies, and like, yeah, I get it. It's fun, but like I also am not interested.
Yeah, I'm not interested either, but I can see people having nostalgia for it.
For sure. Absolutely. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying it's not my jam.
Yeah, it's not my jam either.
Speaking of awards, you know, they released the Steam nominations, and I'm trying to figure out what the fuck people are thinking, because they have fucking Kingdom Come Deliverance was voted as one of the games of the year, and they must be high. Mm-hmm. See, these are the PC elitist assholes who think bad gameplay means good PC game. They confuse it. You know, well, it's not dumbed down. No, it is dumbed down. You just have to use a lot of controls to figure it out. You know, dumbed down, you know, it's dumbed down, but it's like you have to have a keyboard for everything, and the combat sucks. So does the lockpicking. Everything about that game is just awful. Yeah, but since it's dense in terms of not being smart and dumb and just having
you should really go tell them to stop having fun with the game.
No, that's just it. They're not having fun with the games, and they think that's the reason why it's fun.
No,
it's from that mentality in which, no, don't make it better. We like it bad. watch Yahtzee Croshaw's review of that game. He nails it perfectly.
Where are you seeing these Steam nominations? Because I thought it would be on Steam, but I guess it's somewhere else.
Yeah, if you ever consider wanting to play Kingdom Come Deliverance, run far away, run far, run fast. Don't.
Okay.
Unless you're renting it and you want to see how bad it is. Because that game is out and out
well,
bad.
Okay.
Objectively bad. But people like it because it's bad. But not even in a showgirls kind of way. You know? It's more like they're fundamental Christians and really loving Bible Man.
Well, at least Skyrim's on there.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I knew it would never get nominated, but the game that I nominated for Best Environment was Cultist Simulator.
Oh, yeah. You talked about it a lot.
Oh, Civ 6 is on. Awesome.
Of course. And I that's the one I put on because I really couldn't think of anything else to put on that list. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Steam Xbox One crossplay tools hinted in beta source code, and this comes from Windows Central. Talk of a cross-platform multiplayer continues to grow following a surge in support throughout 2018. And by the way, that's been a lot of stuff that we've been talking about this year. If we're going to be talking about topics of the year, I think one of them will be, of course, new digital game stores popping up and deciding to try and kneecap Steam. But the other one is, you know, the talk about crossplay. I mean, we talked about it all this year, you know, with Sony being a dick about it and, you know, Microsoft and Nintendo making fun of them for it and all that stuff. While Microsoft and Nintendo were among those at the forefront of the efforts, we've recently seen Microsoft and Nintendo were among the forefront of those efforts, we've recently seen Sony change their mind. gaining heightened traction across PC, console, and mobile. It's still far from the norm, but it's becoming increasingly attractive amid pressures to drop long-established barriers. A recent update to Steam's beta now hints at deeper cross-platform integration, with source code directly committing to Xbox-related networking features. As posted a Reset Era, new additions to the Steam Beta GitHub repository seems to refer to the Xbox Live identifiers. Crossplayer has been achievable between Steam and Xbox Live titles for some time, with Killer Instinct and Rise of Nations among existing examples. However, these source code changes indicate deeper standardized integration via Valve's Steamworks developer toolset. Further easing the process for crossplay implementation, an open source approach would encourage a wider pool of developers to bridge the gap. Without official mention of such integration from Valve, take this concept lightly. However, with crossplay on the rise, such a prospect could prove beneficial to both Xbox One and PC gamers. We see similar interest from Epic Games, recently committing Open Fortnite's underlying crossplay technology to developers for free. As always, be sure to let us know your thoughts. Well, we're going to give our thoughts.
That is really cool. A recent thing that I saw that goes in hand in hand with this is that Epic was also talking about making their crossplay toolkit available to everybody, which, like, that if things go as like they're planned for a lot of these people, then it should be a really, 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 really easy thing to do with crossplay in probably 2019 going forward. And that's kind of an exciting thing.
This is definitely a good move for Steam to do, and makes sense because, you know, Microsoft has Windows games and Steam has them on their platform. So why not try to crossplay it onto Xbox or vice versa? So I can see this from a business standpoint, and that
I think it's also a threat from Epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if they made the tools available for developers to use just as they will, the way that they've made the Unreal Engine available the way it is, sky's the limit as far as just like people using this whenever they feel like it and making their game crossplay compatible in no matter where they're going with it. And like, who knows who will be the first to pull the trigger on it, but it is a really cool concept, and I hope that they actually move forward with this.
Yeah. You know,
the other thing that that makes me wonder is that Windows 10 games also have the same Xbox Live implementation, and it makes me wonder if it's within Steam and Microsoft's best interest to have more integration between the Windows 10 store and the Steam store.
It probably is, yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move to more good news. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Well, Americans can get Assassin's Creed Odyssey free from Google. This is from Rock, Paper, Shotgun. If you play an hour of Assassin's Creed Odyssey before January 15th, you can keep it forever, but there are two catches. One catch is that you have to play it on Google's Project Stream, and the other is that you have to live in the U.S. to do so. Excuse me. Project Stream is one of those cloud-based clients that lets you run the games on hardware that's many miles away, so you'll probably need a faster connection than a VPN would provide. Project Stream started streaming projects on October 5th, though only in the U.S. and only for a select few invites. It works by running games on beefy computers and piping the results back to your own PC. Other companies such as Alive have tried this before, but it has never caught on. We'll see if Google can buck the trend with this service launches for real, though I couldn't find any estimation for when that might be.
Yeah, I remember playing Mass Effect 2 on a streaming. They had the demo for streaming. And it was interesting because I didn't see any real lag on my PC, that is.
Yeah, I've always had an issue. I've always had that issue when it comes to any games that I've ever streamed. Like, I don't like streaming games just because, like, the input lag feels atrocious on a lot of them for what I've played.
Yeah, but it depends on the games that you're playing, though. I mean, if you're playing a fighting game, then yeah, that's going to be deleterious. But if you're playing something that's single player and an RPG, then no one's going to care.
Yeah, I can see it being useful for, like, an RPG, like Final Fantasy or something, where timing really isn't required. But, like, Yes, fighting games, but also games like Sly Cooper. I tried playing Sly Cooper, and I just could not get the jumps to work, and that's a platform-heavy game. And so, like, in any game where it requires a modicum of reflexes, it's just not fun.
Yeah, not everybody has a really good connection, so it might be very difficult for some who just can't be online that much to do a streaming game.
But that's I think that's the point, though. I mean, the technology is improving, right?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Google... See, here's the thing. You can also have netcode, you know, and Google, if they can do anything right, it's that they really know how to program netcode. So if they have compressions that make it really fast, you know, that you don't need a beefy connection that could play it smoothly, then who knows? I mean, it's free, you know, and you're going to get it for free as well. I mean, if you can keep it for free. And this is before January 15th, so you have plenty of time after this podcast to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I really don't care about Assassin's Creed games anymore. They can eat a dick.
But this one had an ass that you could climb.
Whatever.
The climbable giant ass.
Whatever. I mean, right now the number one mod, one of the biggest mods on Game Watcher that is being downloaded, that allows you to dress the Cassandra as Wonder Woman.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. And it's not sexy Wonder Woman, it's badass Wonder Woman. Just, you know, it's the armored Wonder Woman.
Nice.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take this, TJ.
Discord Store to offer developers 90% of game revenues from Ars Technica. Discord has announced that it will start taking a reduced 10% cut from game revenues generated on its online store starting next year, one-upping the Epic Games Store and its recently announced 12% cut on the Epic Games Store. We talked to a lot of developers, and many of them feel that current stores are not earning their 30% of the usual 70-30 revenue share. Discord writes in the announcement, "Because of this, we now see developers creating their own stores and launchers to distribute their game instead of focusing on what's really important, making great games and cultivating amazing communities."
So stop there. Yeah, you know, that's one of the things about indie developers. You'll always see on sites that they have their own little storefronts just for their games alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rough because you really need to, you know, you really need to sell your own stuff. But even when you do that, usually there you have to pay whatever payment service you're using, like PayPal or whatever, you know, to they still get a cut.
Mm-hmm. And turns out it does not cost 30% to distribute games in 2018. The announcement continues. "After doing some research, we discovered that we can build amazing developer tools, run them, and give developers the majority of the revenue share. The move comes alongside a coming expansion of the Discord Games Store, which launched earlier this year with a tightly curated selection of games that now includes roughly 100 titles. The coming self-serve publishing platform will allow developers, no matter what size, from AAA to single-person teams, to access the Discord Store and the new 90% revenue share." Which is great. If that's true, if it doesn't cost that much to distribute games, then power to them. Good on Discord. Like, as we talked about this when Epic announced this, like, people will go to I have plenty of friends that work in indie games, and if they didn't have to focus on like self promotion and distribution at all, I'm sure they would be thrilled to have that.
Well, we also know that gamers are really lazy, and that's why Epic is able to do their thing, and why Discord is able to do their thing, because we're not going to have to deal with we don't have to do the last paragraph. We can just say it. Discord is best known for doing communications. You know, it's people, you know, you have the strap on their headsets and talk to each other on Discord. So if Discord says, oh, by the way, you know, and you have to imagine, here's the thing about the Discord game studio, how it's separating itself from Steam, and also how Epic is also separating itself from Steam. They haven't really talked about it much, but it's heavily implied, is that they're not making a game store full of 7,000 games. They're curating really heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the Steam list for upcoming games, And my God, the amount of shit that's out there that you can tell are quickie turds.
Scams. Pretty much shovelware scams. Even,
well, here's the thing. They don't have to be scams. They just quickie games with clickbaity names. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they don't have to be scams. You know, they don't have to be asset flip games. They can just be games that you could send another person in an email. You know?
Yeah.
Or my first game. You know, Valve.
Games.
Stop using computers to decide what games go on your thing. Just have human curators.
Yeah, you can make a lot of. They could employ a lot of people to.
You don't
do
even
that.
Need to employ a lot of people. A lot of, you know, five people will be able to immediately tell that if something is shit.
Mm. Yeah, five people spending 8 hours a day just looking at games. Like, it's not that hard.
Just see some of these games. Like, yeah, right. I mean, you don't even have to look at the game. You can look at the logo or the box art for the game. If something's in Comic Sans, you say, get out. Get out.
Judging unless a book it's, by its cover.
No, I'm just saying, they're not taking the time. No, what I mean by that, it's a solid color with a name in Comic Sans. Get out. You didn't spend any time. You didn't even do a screenshot of your game. You just fucking typed something out and put it as your box art. That is lazy. Get out. The thing is, who buys these things, too? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Like, and the funny thing is that if Steam even gave the slightest bit of a shit about curation, then Epic and Discord wouldn't have a chance. Maybe with the 30%, maybe with the change in revenue percent share, but at the same time, like, all Steam would have to do is adjust a little bit and they'd be fine. They're actually like in a situation where they pretty much built the situation where Epic and Discord, all they have to do is be adequate and they'll be doing better than Steam.
Yeah. I mean, if you I'll look at right now, if you have something called Deep Space Waifu Nekomini, you know, no. And it's for $2. Yeah, get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't mind sex games. You know, that's fine if you want to make your own fucking, what's it called, visual novel, which I want to make, by the way. You know, it's like, let me find something that's obviously shit. Like Skater XL. And by the way, you know, all these things are in or One Hell of a Day. I mean, okay, you know, it might be an indie adventure game that I'm shitting on, and if that's the case, I'm sorry. But if you have Quap 4, I mean, you only need Quap 1, don't you? How do you improve on Quap? Or Meadow Fun, just as indie, nothing else. Let me clear mm-hmm. this. Yeah, it's something I could make. I could make better games on Game Maker. Looking at Meadow Fun, you'll find better original Wii games. You know, this is called shovelware.
Yeah,
it's just shovelware. You know, but here's the thing. Now here's the other point that I'm making with this. You know what? The other biggest problem that indie games have. That have nothing to do with people taking a chunk out of your profits, and that is actually getting noticed in the first place. Because you might have the best indie game ever, but if it's in the middle of a couple of Meadow Fun shits, how is anybody going to be able to tell that your game is legitimate and serious? You can try and advertise, go ahead, but that's just more money. And Valve doesn't give a shit. You know what? Games are going to be on their front page. Although, you know, it used to be that Valve would have its own games on the front page, but I don't think that exists anymore. There are no Valve games anymore. Valve doesn't make games anymore.
They made a couple games way back in the day, and people are still playing them now, so whatever.
Right now on the front page, you have the Talos Principle. Okay, that's a game that's 2 years old. The Curious Expedition, that's a year old. But actually, you know, that game's interesting.
Transport you have different Fever. Games on your front page than I do. I have different ones.
Well, that's because it's also algorithms detecting what we want to play. I mean, I own the Long Dark, which is why the Forest open world survival horror game is the very big is the first game on my list.
Mm.
By the way, that's a news item. The Long Dark just had a major content update. Major content, and I'm probably gonna have to check that out. I backed it on Kickstarter too, so. So I do have some intelligence. Warframe, I would never play.
Did that come to Steam? Yeah. I didn't realize that came to Steam.
Yeah. Here it is, Long Dark. It says, what's it called, the news about the major content update. And, you know, it's a redux. It's just, you know, I haven't played in a long while because here's the thing about the Long Dark. It is fucking hard.
Yeah, that's what I hear about it.
It is a one hardcore, I'm lucky to find a fucking cabin so I can build a fire. I mean, it's one of those games where you better go to the FAQ and find out. I mean, the game I really should be playing is Clay's, what's the name of that black and white game again? Don't Starve. That's the game that I should play. But no, I played this because I backed it on Kickstarter.
It was when I was Don't Starve is more sepia than black and white.
What?
Don't Starve is more sepia than black and white.
Yeah, and then they have all these Don't Starves now, you know,
yeah,
that have nothing to do with Don't Starve. But anyways, the point is that Valve just brought it on themselves. You know, there's no such thing as too big to fail. You know, and they're slowly getting off their asses. We already talked about, you know, cross-platform play. You know, they have to do something. They make too much of a profit not to be able to hire people, human beings. Because, you know, it's all right if you have curators, but guess what? I don't give a shit about the curators that they hire. You know, that the volunteer curators, I don't give a shit about. I'm not going to go to, oh, let me see what PC Gamer says about this game. No, 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 no. I want the curation on the front end. I want, if I look into the store, you know, aside from the stuff that's, you know, that's tailored to me, because here's the thing. I don't always want to play the same fucking game over and over and over again. You know? If yeah. I look on the upcoming games, I want to look at something and say, hey, that looks interesting. It's not a $2 game. By someone who just wants you to buy it once, hoping there's a thousand losers who will fall for whatever shit they're putting out there. You know, I want to see stuff that I think, oh, you know, that looks like an interesting concept. I don't have to worry about it being, oh, it was made. There's 5 hours put into this game.
Yeah, like even stores like Nintendo, like the Nintendo storefront is a mess. It's a UI that is so stupidly old and needs an update so bad. But, like...
Oh, fuck that. What about iOS's fucking store? Apple hasn't fixed that shit. They say they have, but I haven't really seen any real improvement to it. I mean, for me to buy something from iOS, I already know what I want, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a similar state with me and Nintendo, where I don't really go in there unless I know what I'm going for. And that's, you know, that's actually kind of true of Steam these days, too. I don't go to Steam to, like, look through their catalog and see what's going on, because, like, I know it's a fucking mess. I go in there with an idea in mind, I type it in, I find the game, I check out. I don't stick around any longer than I have to. And... quite frankly, like, I can go to places like GOG and see what they've got going on and see, like, that they've put up that looks new and fun.
I don't know if I should be insulted, but I'm looking at the recommended new releases based on what you're playing. One of them is Cute Girls for $4, and the other one is Hot Girls for $12. I guess Hot Girls are three times better than Cute Girls.
Usually they'll say why they recommended that, because you played a previous game.
I'm looking at the trailer for Cute Girls, and immediately they're just jiggle physics boobs waved in my face. Free hands mode. Really? Ugh. Or they look at hot girls now. Oh, same thing. The first thing I see is a woman with her boobs and jiggle physics, and you can grope her.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world of beautiful hot girls. Meet them all, play with them in a party, and ... ellipses, ellipses, ellipses. Do what you want. Everything depends on your imagination. What if I don't want girls? What if I'm a gay guy? Maybe I should write I am gay just so I can see what they'll ship me next. next one is Rail World, which looks it looks like an iOS port. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm just saying that directly that's an Android iOS game that was directly ported to Steam.
Yeah.
Then At Home Alone, which is another Japanese game, but this one is 8-bit. Then Game Builder. Very positive reviews, 11 people, it's early access. I have no idea what it is, but it looks cheap. But it's a game builder, and it allows you to make your own cheap games. I'll just get RPG Maker. I'm just saying, and I'll say this again, because you stressed it. Right now, I already know what I want if I go to the Steam store. It's not there to browse.
Yeah.
And Discord has 100 games, which is a lot more manageable, and if I was on Discord, I might browse. Epic has 24 games right now. They're just starting. And, you know, obviously I'll browse. I mean, they had a free game offer. I think they gave away Subnautica? Oh, no, wait. What did they give away?
Yes, they gave Subnautica, and they gave away Super Meat Boy, I think it was.
Yeah, Super Meat Boy, the new one, Super Meat Boy World.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I haven't tried Subnautica. It looks okay.
Yeah, and they did Hades on that one.
Yeah, well.
Which is very cool. Like,
yeah, but it's Tunic. See.
It's a Supergiant Games game, so it's well worth everybody's time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Indie developers can sometimes fart out a bad game. I'm looking at you, hello. Okay, to be fair, No Man's Sky has become playable. Mm-hmm. But it's still not as good as Elite Dangerous. We're talking too much about this. We're going to go into the next topic. Inca announced for Civilization VI, The Gathering Storm. This comes to us from a press release. Inca was the latest Civ to join Civilization VI, The Gathering Storm, led by Pachacuti, and I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it, the ruler responsible for transforming the Kingdom of Cuzco into the structured Incan Empire. The Incan benefited greatly from mountain tiles and internal trade routes, making this Civ a great choice for isolationist players. And oh, by the way, I see a pattern developing with the Civs that they're releasing for Gathering Storm, and I'll discuss that right after. The unique improvement is the Terrace Farm. These unique improvements can be placed on grassland, desert, plains, hills, and provide food. However, their adjacency bonuses make them even stronger improvement. When next to a mountain, Terrace Farms provide even more food, and when placed next to an aqueduct, they provide additional production. They also receive production from adjacency to fresh water. Feudalism and replacement parts also create opportunities for additional adjacency bonuses when placing the Terrace Farms next to one another. In addition, the unique ability Mita allows Incan citizens to actively work mountain tiles. These tiles provide production to the city, and for each adjacent terrace farm, they also grant food. The unique unit is the Waraka, a medieval recon ute, which can attack twice in a single turn, so long as all of its movement points have not been spent in that turn. That may sound great, but it's still a recon unit. Finally, the Incans have the Kapaknyan, where domestic trade routes grant additional food for each mountain tile that exists in the borders of the origin city. This ability also grants access to early mountain tile improvement of the same name. This improvement is an early version of the new mountain tunnel, unlockable after discovering the foreign trade civic. These allow players to create links between tiles among mountain ranges, letting units traverse them quickly. Now, let's go back to the Canadians. The Canadians, their entire deal seemed to be making those tundra spaces useful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Incans, this seems to be making all the mountains useful.
So basically, a lot of these civilizations are making what was once inhospitable startups usable.
Definitely. Well, here's the thing. Mountains weren't useless because they had a lot of things. For one thing, they were always breathtaking, so it was easy to make a national park there. They also granted bonuses to science or religion, usually. But on the other hand, they were impassable, and if you didn't have a reason to – there were too many mountains, then it would be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is making now, mountains productive.
Useful. Yeah. It is good. And, I mean, even being impassable could be an advantage if you planned your city right. But this will make it even more so and allow players to turtle up if they want to with this sieve.
This is the ultimate turtle sieve because the press release sort of glosses over it, but if you watch the video, the internal domestic trade routes are beefed up to a big degree. A lot of food and a lot of production, mostly food, but that just makes them grow. So now you have the ability to grow really fast in a mountainous region, and that's something that couldn't happen with other sieves when you're in the mountains. You can't grow food on them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This one grants food for having mountains near you. So now you can be in the worst piece of shit place, but if you're the Incans, you know, seas are still growing big and fast. And yeah, this does encourage turtling in isolation because you just have this compact. It's like the Japanese Civ except on steroids, because all the Japanese can do, quote unquote, is they can have their districts near each other and get a bonus for that.
So we've got a sieve that can make a lot of use of the water. We've got a sieve that can make use of the tundra. We've got to use a sieve that makes use of the mountain. Is this the last one that's going to be announced, or is there another one coming?
There's probably the last one. There's a bunch of them. Now, here's the thing.
Last DLC, or last expansion, probably.
Yeah, there's, I believe there's 16 sieves in this one, or no, 9 sieves, I'm sorry. Yeah, but here's the thing. You might say, well, the desert is next, but we already have 2 sieves that really take advantage of the desert.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and the one that I was thinking about is there one that handles the jungle well yet?
Oh, yeah, the Aztecs. The Aztecs, you know, they have their units that go fast in the thing, and they also, the Aztecs work it.
I was going to say, because in Civ 5, you had Brazil, who was really, right. really, really good in the jungle.
No, they Brazil, were... in this case, are just really, really good at religion.
Yeah.
Or am I confusing them with Haile Selassie? Wait, what is... No, I mean, Brazil also loves to religion bomb people. But yeah, so we have the tundra, we have the mountains, I mean, and we have the water. It's going to be interesting to see what's next. I think these three are going first simply because they fundamentally change strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised for the next one to be Eleanor of Aquitaine and see what changes they do with the English civilization. By the way, all the civilizations are being changed because of new mechanics. You know, they all have new mechanics. We're just seeing the new Civ, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do. They did hint at what some of the changes with the British were going to be in the original Gathering Storm video. But yeah, I'm getting ready to pre-order the Gathering Storm. I mean, it's not like I wasn't going to buy it in the first place, but these sieves are getting me hyped up.
Well, that's good.
I'm still going for Canada first. Not because I like Dan so much, but because I like their abilities.
Yeah, they'll definitely make an interesting gameplay because you want to be in the tundra for the first time ever.
I really do like the ocean sieve the best so far. That sounds the most unique to me. Is a sieve that actually does well, like just like A, starts in the ocean, and B, does well on it.
Yeah.
And not like I know the Nords are in the game and like Eric and whatnot, but like.
Yeah, but those guys are basically militaristic water. You know,
yeah.
Their entire deal is that they like to go and beat the crap out of you and be pirates.
You also forgot about Hungry, who was in this expansion as well.
Yeah.
So that yes.
Yeah, what's their thing on water?
Their entire deal is that they like to they're the city state people.
Okay.
They, Also, you can't attack them. You can't do a surprise war, and they can't. You know, they can't do
war
against you. You can't do it against them.
That's
so,
Canada.
Yeah, the Maiari, on the other hand, are defensive. I looked it up. Their ships are more defensive ships. They're not. They're not built to go out and be pirates. They're there to protect their coastlines.
Right. So I'm talking about like a civ that is economical. Economically sound on the ocean is cool.
Especially mm-hmm. you do the island plates. Oh. Island plates set up in which you just have a bunch of archipelagos in the world. But yeah, it's looking good. And, you know, every Tuesday is, for me now, is, oh, what's the next civ they're going to really, they're going to reveal?
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying hearing and talking about these. It's actually making me kind of want to play the game again.
I just hope the Maiari allow you to do the haka. I just want them to do haka. Before attacking, they do a haka.
I don't think that's an unfair ask.
Yeah, I think he already does it. I think the leader already does it a little bit varied about it. By the way, the Maiari leader... is still is my favorite because he's the most expressive.
Yes, the videos of him are fun, are really really fun.
It's Coupe, by the way. So, anyways, so like I said, this is a last episode of 2018, and we'd love to hear from you, hear what your favorite game of the year was.
Are you going to kick it off, or what do you want to do?
We're just going to talk about it in the next episode. We have plenty of time. You have plenty of time to think about it. Also, we're probably going to talk about what games in 2019 we're really looking forward to. I mean, we've done that already in the past few weeks, but now it's an end of the year thing, or the beginning of the year thing, really.
Okay. Sure.
So, I think it'd be nice at this time for us to just give your TJ your impressions of 2018.
As far as this podcast goes, it's been a pretty good year for us. I think one of my highlights was the time that you and I were chatting so much that Scott just straight up fell asleep on recording.
Mm-hmm. You mean he didn't fall asleep now? Scott, you awake? Wake up!
I am here.
But it's been a phenomenal year for games. It was ridiculously packed.
Like, yeah.
Every time that you think it's going to be done and it's over, something fresh was announced, and it was kind of crazy. And a lot of the games that were announced well beforehand that came out this year were pretty good. Like,
oh God, no! Actually, here's the thing: a lot of the games that were really, really hyped turned out to be eh. All the games that have really turned heads, it seems to me they've all been either indie or double A. You know, name a big, big game, especially on PC, that was announced that, you know, like, let's see, Fallout 76, you know,
Well, that was here. Monster Hunter, people love that.
I did love Monster Hunter.
Wow.
Jonah hated it.
I mean, PC gamers liked it because, oh, look, we're finally going to play this console game on PC. Eh. Call of Cthulhu. Eh.
I mean, Monster Hunter World was still a spectacle, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah. That was definitely a success.
A monkey throwing a turd into an old woman's face is a spectacle, too. It doesn't mean I want to see it. Or maybe I do.
Yeah, but what if that monkey is 500 feet tall? That's going to be a pretty big turd, Jonah.
That's basically how you can contain this entire year. Pretty big turd. No, but here's the thing. You know, a lot of the games that came out, you know, it was... I think it happens... It doesn't... You know, I mean, Red Dead Redemption 2 was, met expectations, you know. I didn't like God of War. The combat was kind of shit. And the story was okay. By the way, I am so over Hairy Dad games. You can tell that all these developers are old enough to have children, and now they're making their hairy dad games.
I like Dad of War. I like Dad of War a lot. It was one of the more interesting things I've played this year. It was a great year for fighting games too. Oh my god, there was a lot of good fighting games this year.
Yeah, I mean, because Street Fighter V wasn't released this year.
But there was
Arc 6 and Works had two games come out.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. The Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle was the gift that kept on giving. I had to make sure of it.
I know,
but
you
yes.
Were bored of Dragon Ball FighterZ, but
I did, but I had fun with it while I was playing it, and it's still worthwhile to watch. Like, people are still doing it. It is the most played fighting game around right now, and that's with Street Fighter in the running. Freaking Tekken 7 had a stellar year. Soul Calibur 6 had a good cap on the end of this year. And then,
you know, I know, here's the thing. Soul Calibur 6 was fine. It just wasn't grabbing me like previous Soul Calibers did. I mean, I can see where other people really, really, really enjoy it, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm spoiled by Injustice 2.
Yeah, but still, it has, like, one of the things I gotta say is that it probably has one of the most interesting character creators I've ever seen. And not just because people were making weird things with it. But, there's something really interesting about Create a Soul Mode. And, like, it's...
I forgot Tekken 6 came out this year.
Tekken 7.
Tekken 7, I mean.
I think RPGs had a good year this year, too, with Octopath Traveler, Dragon's Quest 11, Ni No Kuni 2, and, of course, Pillars of Eternity. So there was a lot of good RPGs out there this year.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that with the RPGs, I think the best is yet to come, because a lot of the games that I'm looking forward to in terms of RPGs are not coming until next year, until 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's fine to have the oh, by the way, that's one thing we have to talk about. It's not a surprise, but Cyberpunk is going to be released in 2020. I don't think anybody was expecting it to come out in 2019.
Now, yeah, one surprise this year for me was the game A Way Out, where you're a two-player game and you're trying to break out of prison with your friend. And there's a twist to the game that I think really made it interesting, because you don't really do that often in a co-op game. And you know, it just suddenly gets flipped on its head and turns into player versus player. And it's just like, it's a shock when that happens.
A Way Out is ridiculous. Like, I loved that game, and it gave me the feels.
Yeah, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, I guess. I mean, but here's the thing. You'd have thought that Just Cause 4 would be an easy, you know, it'd be an easy win, but it's gotten bad reviews.
I haven't heard a single thing about Just Cause 4.
It's getting 6.5s and 6s.
And I gotta say, I'm not all that surprised, because, like, Just Cause 3 was only, like... It wasn't that long ago. Like, it really kind of felt like Just Cause 4 came out of nowhere with no fanfare, no preparation, and just, like, slipped out the door with a quiet whisper.
Yeah.
And I guess we're starting to see why, but, like, it really did feel like a rush between... I guess Just Cause 3 was in 2015, but it doesn't feel like it's been that long. It feels like they were putting out, like... It feels like they were putting out a DLC for Just Cause 3 for, like, pretty recently, and then suddenly Just Cause 4.
Hmm. You know what's funny is that I almost forgot that Vampyr came out this year and how much it's just left my mind. It's like, eh. And Far Cry 5, I mean, that was a game I was really looking forward to, and it's like when I play it, eh.
From a narrative standpoint, I still enjoyed Vampyr.
No. It wanted so badly to be Vampyr the Masquerade, it's not even funny. I will say, you know, I don't understand the shit that Batman Telltale Game took. I really don't understand it. I loved that game. Maybe it's because it went so far outside of what is considered canon for Batman. You know, so many changes to the story, but that's what I liked. It was like watching in an alternate universe in which the Waynes were criminal overlords.
Yeah, like, and I don't see what's wrong with that either. I think it's just the fact that Telltale went through so many issues and they just didn't change up their games enough to capture people's interest by that point.
Yeah.
That was maybe one of the biggest tragedies of 2018 was Telltale just falling apart at the seams. And
it's a good thing that I didn't play that many. Here's the thing. I did not get the Walking Dead games, you know, that came after season 2. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I wouldn't have felt the same had I played them as sort of like, yeah, enough already.
Yeah, but like I can also count so many good Telltale experiences I've had over the last years, and like it's really, really disappointing to me to see the studio that brought us such an awesome series of Sam and Max just fall apart, and all these problems coming up with the developers and crunch time, and just like, and then it just collapses into oblivion.
Yeah, I mean, there are games out there which got high reviews which I've not played, like Surviving Mars, and you know, got really good reviews. I haven't played it yet. I mean, a lot of these games are, you know, I think survival games are now the new genre, alongside the battle royale games.
New? I don't think they're new. Like,
I mean, they're hot now. Let me put it that way.
I know that people are interested in making them, but like maybe it's just me, but I don't see the huge appeal.
Let me ask you a question. With what Telltale went through, what is your opinion of the Life is Strange game now, the sequel? Because you know, it'll be interesting to see how people react to that, if they've actually lost the taste for adventure games, or at least AAA adventure games.
It's not that I think that people lost the taste for adventure games. It's that I think that they were tired of seeing Telltale do almost the exact same interface over and over again.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, Life is Strange isn't that much different. The first one wasn't that much different from a Telltale game, except, okay, they had the photography mechanic.
Mm-hmm. And just a few things here and there can break up monotony. Like, Oxenfree is one that comes to mind. Is like it's a pretty by the book adventure game, but
yeah, that was more of a walking simulator than an actual adventure game.
Oxenfree? No, yeah. You make choices in that game.
Yeah, you make choices, but it's still a walking simulator to me. I mean,
I don't know if I would call it that.
Well, like, then again, I could classify all the Telltale games as walking simulators because you don't really make any choices in those either. I mean,
I wouldn't classify King's Quest as a walking simulator, so I wouldn't classify Oxenfree as a walking simulator.
King's Quest as dung, and just flush it.
I classify you
wash
as dung.
Wash your mouth up with soap, Jonah Falcon. I ought to come over there and slap you for that.
Or well, if this, too bad I didn't say shit about Monkey Island, or else you could just say I fight like a cow.
Your taste. Mouth or whatever.
I'm sorry, I do not like the reboots of the King's Quest games. They're just not that good.
Well, I disagree. I thought they were awesome.
Feel free to disagree.
I do.
Was there a King's Quest game released this year?
No, they did like a series of them, and they did a series of episodes, I think, in 2016?
Yeah, something like that, and then they finished, and I haven't seen a single Sierra game since. I haven't heard anything of them since that. Like they've released 3 games and then nothing. So I don't know what the new Sierra is doing. If anything.
I will say this about 2018: at least it had a Leisure Suit Larry game that did not suck.
Oh my God! They actually
My wife actually wants to get the game. She saw it played on Game Grumps, and she's like, this is cute.
Larry, Wet Dreams Don't Dry, it's basically metatextual, because what you're doing is you're taking Leisure Suit Larry from the 90s and plopping them here, so you have that culture clash shtick, you know, and also a lot of metatextual commentary on adventure games in general. I mean, but on the other hand, it's not embarrassing to play.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant how it handles itself and its understanding of those games. And the way it starts out is such an awesome Easter egg. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, you start out in the Amiga version.
No.
I know that you visit the Amiga version in it.
You do. But the way it starts out is in the first game, I don't know if people realize this, but the place you kick off the game in
is the lefties.
Oh, the
Even before that. So an Easter egg that people probably didn't recognize in Leisure Suit Larry, Wet Dreams Don't Dry, is that you start out in a factory, and the meaning behind that factory is that if you die in the first Leisure Suit Larry game,
it
takes Larry's corpse, grinds him up into mush, and produces a new Larry in the factory, and then pushes him up through a manhole in front of lefties, and it tells you that's what happens when you die and we have to remake your character again. And for that Larry to come out of that factory in 2018 is just like the smartest shit I've ever seen a game kick off with.
I can't remember if it was part two or not, but there was something about when you quit Leisure Larry game, he's like, you don't know what the other games do to me when you're not around.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like the smallest little Easter egg. Mm-hmm. To have been able to recognize that factory that happens when Larry dies from the first game, but it made me like instantly smile my ass off when I was watching them play that game.
Also, you know, the one thing about this game which does something that the other games really didn't quite know how to do, and that is the female characters in this in Wet Dreams Don't Dry are not just pinups that you gotta fuck. They're actually three-dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, you know, the game has enough.
Did Al Lowe make this game, or is this made by somebody else?
I think Al Lowe did it. I don't remember who the developer is. But, I mean, you know what? Let me look at Al Lowe. I'm pretty sure
Al Lowe. It came from a group called Crazy Bunch.
Yeah, I know, but no, Al Lowe was 100% not involved.
And it looks like they've mostly just done. They apparently re-released a bunch of the Leisure Suit Larry games on Steam, but other than that, they've done some things like it looks like simulator games like Pizza Creator.
Yeah. I'm seeing
actually Al Lowe is a little bit salty about the game.
Crawler and Break a Brick.
Here's the thing. Yeah, Al Lowe said about the game, if that title's the best thing they could come up with, I'm glad I'm not. Al, what the fuck? That's the that's the title that you would fucking definitely come up with. Wet Dreams Don't Dry, that would be front and center on shit that you wrote. Don't tell me that you wouldn't go that low. Or that cringe. The name of the game is probably the most cringeworthy part. I mean, the rest of it is just fine.
I mean, his second game is called Looking for Love in Several Wrong Places, so whatever.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I noticed that in this game also, Larry isn't a short, squat guy anymore. He's actually tall.
Yeah, but they still make him dumpy, which is perfect.
I mean, he has a little bit of belly, but he's not that little 4'8" homunculus.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit better in part one and two. It was mostly the newer games like 6 and 5, I think, that he was like short and dumpy.
Well, in the first one, he was a bunch of pixels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he's pixels in all of them. He just has more pixels as he goes older.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but according to Al Lowe and the other developers of the game, the original Amiga game was so pirated that there were 6 times more strategy guides for the game bought than actual games sold. I actually bought the game, and I had to do that stupid test. Sometimes I lie, I say I was 98 and would ask me about the teapot dome party. So it wasn't exactly the most. It was a fun way to do an age verification.
Yeah,
people are going to lie anyway. So, But yeah, okay, so Loser Larry, Wet Dreams Don't Dry was my best game of 2018. I'm kidding. But I will say it was the nicest surprise that, you know, that it wasn't bad. It was good enough.
Yeah, because I think the previous two were very horrible.
I tried to like the one that was an, I won't say an open world game.
Any of them were open world.
Yeah, there was one that was open world, in which it was, it got blasted. It got really bad reviews, but here's the thing. I actually liked it for a little bit. Oh yeah, Box Office Bust. That's the one I played. And it wasn't Larry Laffer, it was Larry Lovage. It was his son who was in that game. But the jokes in it were so awful in every sense of the word. It went around to being fun, you know, but then the bad gameplay mechanics just killed it for me, you know. So I mean, look at Loser Larry Reloaded, which was the remake of In the Land of Laughing Lizards. He was short and dumpy in that. He does not look like that in in this game. Maybe it's the machine built him taller.
Although it's absolutely the same voice.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I played the soft porn adventure. Which is why I did so well in Leisure Larry in the Lands of the Lounge Lizards, because it was a remake of that game. I mean, I didn't even know it, too. I sort of said, wait a minute. This game seems familiar. And by the time I was giving the apple to Eve, I said, yeah, this is a remake of Soft Porn Adventure. It wasn't that I looked it up, and then, it was the same guy who did it. So, anyways. So, hope you'll see us in two weeks. Hold on. Yep, we'll see you on New Year's Day. By the way, the other reason why there's not going to be a podcast next week, aside from it being the holidays, I'm moving back to New York and on the 27th, and I'm going to have everything boxed up by then, so I won't even have a computer to talk to do a podcast from.
Safe travels.
Safe travels, yeah.
Well, I'm hoping the plane doesn't crash. Yes. Anyways, we will see you in 2019 on January the 1st.
Woohoo!
And we'll have two civilizations to talk about by then.
Sure.
This is becoming the new Polycast.
Yeah.
Scott, I haven't listened to it. How has it changed without Dan there now?
He hasn't quite left yet. I think they just did the last episode, so they haven't done a Candace only episode. So that's coming in the new year, where the new host will be Candace Albanus, with me and team Megalua and Mega Bear Fan. So it'll be different, definitely. Yeah. Not as many puns, probably not as many polls or singing jokes, but it'll still be interesting.
Not as much a Canadian accents.
Yeah.
Because the Polycast was a boot, all the Canadians.
It's kind of sad,
actually, now that I think about it, that Dan's not around to talk about the Canadian civilization.
Well, you can still talk to him and maybe have him on the show and talk about it if you want.
We'll see. Anyways, we will see you in 2019.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Be fun. Or have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.